1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 21st of October, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 11 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, things you can lose. We don't care.
We'll talk about it all.
Exactly. Before we get to the phones, now you know the numbers. He just announced them. I will do a little bit of news. Ubuntu users, rejoice. Ubuntu 7.10 is here. Ubuntu, the remarkably popular desktop Linux distribution that tries to bring the latest and greatest open source programs to you every 6 months, arrived on October 18th. The gutsy Gibbon, Ubuntu 7.10 desktop edition, includes improvements in advanced plug-and-play printing, enhanced browsing, and the option of a smooth new user interface built on top of the new GNOME 2.20 desktop. The distribution is available on all of Ubuntu's download sites and mirrors. Just because a site has a new release doesn't really mean you'll be able to download it. About half the sites have been at maximum capacity since Thursday, and some are not allowing any more users. I downloaded it to a laptop at work. It took almost 5 hours. Users can also download Ubuntu 7.10 via BitTorrent. On Thursday, I found that the Ubuntu torrents are not especially fast. I was seeing speeds in the 10 to 20 kilobits per second range. This was due to the relatively small number of seeds, BitTorrent sites with a full distribution compared to the much larger number of peers. Yesterday, I couldn't get a torrent running at all from the official mirrors, nor could I download the thing because it was so jam-packed. The latest version of Ubuntu includes a number of new features, including automatic firmware installation for broadband Wi-Fi cards. Laptop users will also be pleased to see improved support for display systems. With Gutsy Gibbon, full external VGA projector support is available out of the box with easy reconfiguration when hardware is switched. Mark Shuttleworth, Canonical CEO and Ubuntu's founder, believes that Ubuntu 7.10 now offers the best VGA support for laptops of any Linux distribution. And before the Mac people get their panties in a bunch, because I didn't mention an operating system that's not available yet, Steve will, or likely already has, posted a link to Apple's softcore porn tour of Leopard. Bring your own Kleenex, because you know it's so beautiful it'll make you cry.
Oh yeah.
I downloaded Gutsy Gibbon to a laptop at work. And like I said, it took over 5 hours, but holy mother of pearl, what a nifty product.
Yeah, but you did it on the cutting edge of the day of the major release, right?
Yeah.
Well,
it's beautiful.
And it was probably well worth every minute of the wait.
Well, all I did was say, download this and went to meetings for 5 hours.
That worked.
That's when I came back. It was about ready for me to start answering questions. Do you want to update this? Whatever.
Whatever it takes.
It worked great. I was very impressed. It's faster much. It boots like twice as fast as it used to. And it's so responsive and so smooth, and there's lots of neat new things in it. It's,
but you know you're going to get yourself in trouble.
Why?
Well, you're bragging about this, right?
Yeah.
And when you get home, what are your wife and daughter running?
No, my wife is running XP, and she couldn't possibly want anything else ever.
But what about your daughter?
My daughter is running Ubuntu, and she will be upgraded next week. My home machine is Ubuntu. Her home machine is Ubuntu. They're going to be upgraded next week when the sites are a little less filled.
Folks, we're taking bets.
Yeah.
Whose machine gets done first, Nick's or Amelia's?
Yeah.
My odds are Amelia.
Oh, Amelia's. There's no question she'll be done first, but it won't be this week. We'll wait until the mirrors are a little less.
You can call me anytime. You know, let me know. Cuss out. Damn it. I thought I wasn't going to do this for another week. She got me doing it today. I wanted to just rest and get caught up on stuff.
Right. Not going to happen. I know that. I know that. But that's it. That's Gutsy Gibbon. And if you're interested in Ubuntu, you can download the live CD, boot up with it, and it'll run much more slowly because it's running off a CD. But you'll be able to play around with it and have fun. It's a pretty neat toy. All right, off to the phones. Our first caller is Henry from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Yes, we have the Microsoft.NET version, I think 1.1, and I'm getting these update messages where you're supposed to update the application, and it's trying to update both version 1.1, it's a security update for version 1.1 and version 2. Now, we don't have 2, so when it tries to go through the update for that, it comes up with an error message saying the updates could not be installed. But the little shield on the bottom right is still there, waiting to try it once again to install the update for version 2.
Do you even use the .NET?
Yes, my wife does.
Okay.
She's a developer.
And she's still using 1.1?
Yes.
We
didn't upgrade.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah,
it's clearly something confused about Microsoft's update program. It may want you to upgrade as opposed to update.
The running service pack, too.
But I don't know why you would be getting an error.
Well, the error is correct. It can't be updated.
It can't be installed. Yeah, but then...
so it's not really an error.
I would like to simply stop trying. That's what I'd like.
You have to go into the... When you get the notice about updates available, there's a... What's that, custom? There's Express?
Yeah, you go into custom, and you can select that particular one.
Oh.
Uncheck it,
and then click on the plus button, and that opens up a little... drops it down, and you can say, don't remind me again.
Okay. I didn't know that. Okay,
yep.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
All righty. Our next caller is Judy from Cape Vincent. Judy, where's Cape Vincent?
It's in the Thousand Islands.
Cool. It's still Cape Vincent, New York?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah, we're right where Lake Ontario empties into the St. Lawrence River.
Ah, very nice place.
Beautiful. Yeah, unfortunately, we've got to close up and come home, but...
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, winter is coming.
Yeah.
So I need your advice about a new computer. I've got a Gateway. It's coming up on 10 years old.
Whoa.
Windows 98.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with it at all, except that I can't get any of the AOL security updates. I can't get AOL version 9.
Right.
I added more memory, but it's still...
Yeah, that's not going to do you any good, Judy.
Right.
From the standpoint, you know, this 10-year-old machine has served you well.
Yes, it has. And it's in trouble.
And it's just coming to the reality that you've got to now step up to the next operating system, which would mean buying a new machine, because I can guarantee you, a machine that's 10 years old is not worth upgrading anymore. Don't sink any more money into it.
You'd pay more upgrading it than a new machine would cost.
Well, that's what they're telling me, and my dilemma is everybody I've talked to, except the people who sell computers, tell me to avoid Vista at all costs.
Right.
Now, I haven't seen that XP is still available anywhere.
Yes, I'm still offering it.
Yeah, it's a little harder to find if you go to the national stores, but your local computer dealers may have it.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily avoid Vista. Vista in itself isn't any worse than XP was. A little better in some respects.
Yeah, it is in some aspects,
but
a lot of stuff just isn't going to work.
That's the problem.
Right.
If the things you already have, your current printer, your current scanner, your current software, probably won't work under Vista. So you'll have to upgrade all of those, too. And some of those programs haven't been updated yet. And the annoying thing is, it's been a year since Vista went Golden Master. And companies are still don't have drivers out, they don't have updates out to work with Vista. So if you buy a new computer with Vista and don't add anything to it, it'll be fine. But most of us want to add stuff to it
right.
And run our own stuff.
So yes, get XP, definitely. People like
with
Dave...
an eye towards... being able to upgrade down the future.
Right. You want a machine that's capable of running Vista, even though you're putting XP on it.
Okay. And then I should look at independent dealers to try and find XP.
Right. XP can still be had anywhere, but you just got to find a vendor.
In fact, they just extended the... Right, they were going to stop... Microsoft was going to stop selling XP in January. They just extended that to June.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought I'm looking at the...
If you go to your big stores, they're still going to tell you, oh, no, you only can buy Vista. It's because that's what they've got in stock.
Right.
And, you know, like you say, if you go to your smaller shops and that can do a custom build, they'll spend the time to sit down with you and figure out what you want. They'll do it for you.
Okay.
All right.
Wonderful. Good advice, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you. That's what we like to hear. All right. We are going to take a break. We've got bunch of people on the line. Please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, I don't know why not. Get on the line now. We'll get to you when we come back. We have Dave Enright. We have Steve Ray. We have Chris Reich, who has, again, once again, generously donated time and equipment to do the podcast for us. We have Jessica Sawyer, who's so far been brilliant. We'll reserve judgment for later in the show.
Well, she's
so
cuter than Rob.
Well, then, who isn't? But still, she is very cute. And she's doing a great job so far. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound. See, she's right in there with her name getting ready and everything. Rob, who's been doing this for, what, 100 years?
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'm like, oh yeah,
he's got
the mic
made.
Over. I'm rumbling. All right, we're just making fun of him. I hope he's listening and is annoyed. Before we get back to the phones, let's talk about Real Player. Attackers are exploiting a Real Player zero-day flaw to gain control of Windows systems through Internet Explorer. The unpatched vulnerability affects all versions of Real Player, including the most recent 10.5, as well as the beta of Real Player 11. The zero-day vulnerability involves an ActiveX object in the Real Player component, IERPplug.dll. It's not the first time this DLL has been exploited, but it's the worst, given that only remote denial of service has been previously achieved. It appears that now the exploit can actually activate code on the compromised computer. The malware is being serviced on malicious websites. Symantec is unsure of how many sites are serving it up, but that it's a targeted attack against the Symantec customer. The sample of the code that Symantec received exploits the Real Player vulnerability and then downloads a Trojan. So if an attacker can potentially take over the targeted system, Symantec said if the vulnerability is successfully exploited, the malware triggers the playing of a clip called Video Test from the My Library folder, which is available in standard installations of Real Player. So if you've had that happen to you, you're caught. Definitely go and get yourself some antivirus software and clean up your system.
Nick, is that advisement for all operating systems?
It appears to be, in terms of actually taking over the machine, it appears to be for Windows machines only.
Okay.
But the vulnerability exists in all versions of Real Player. But right now it's being exploited strictly through an ActiveX object.
Very good.
Which would be Windows. But the vulnerability is still there. All right, our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. Hey, Joe, what do you know?
How you doing, guys?
Good, and you?
Thank you for your program. I love it. I listen to it all the time, and you guys are awesome.
Well, thank you so much. You need professional help, Joe.
Yes, I do. but not a psychiatrist. I got a question. My work is buying me a laptop to use. I'm a truck mechanic, and I'll be using it for different programs that I'm going to run for the vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I have to, the programs that I'm running are going to be manual, shop manuals that are going to be stored in the computer, and there's hundreds and hundreds of pages and a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they want to get a 1 gigabyte computer, and I understand that I should have a 2 gigabyte.
Well, it depends on the operating system and the requirements of the software. You can have a 1 gigabyte, and it could be more than enough for the software, but it's also going to depend, since you're displaying probably displays of brake assemblies and all this other stuff, the graphics is probably going to be your main concern, having a better graphics card in it.
Right, because it's going to be electrical schematics, mm-hmm. and there's going to be a lot of information.
Yeah, so your graphics card is going to be your key.
And consider a large screen as well.
Right.
It's not necessarily the graphics card. A better graphics card would do 2D files just about the same, but it would be a lot better on 3D files. So if you're doing 3D shading and rendering,
well,
then a better graphics card.
Some of these programs I've seen that you can sit there and literally take the part.
Yep.
And some of these programs and rotate it.
The problem is with a laptop, it's very hard to find a laptop with a separate video chip. Almost all of them use shared video, so you got to dig into the specs a little harder.
Acer, you can get separate graphics. As a matter of fact, their newer one now, right now, comes with a 512 dedicated graphics.
Yeah.
And
answer your question, Joe. 1 gig is probably enough in terms of it'll run. 2 gig would mean you could run things faster, and you could run more things at once.
Oh, okay.
So if, for example, all your shop manuals are in PDFs, and you want to open 2 or 3 at a time, you'll want more RAM.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to have a shop manual open for, you know, general procedures, and then a second one open with specific diagrams of a part, and you want to be able to be online at the same time, like on your web browser, so that you can look up the latest information from the manufacturer, whatever, 2 gig would serve you much better than 1.
Ah, okay. Because naturally, they're thinking of saving money, and it's like a $400 difference between the two computers.
Yeah, laptop memory is not cheap.
But
in terms of your productivity, in terms of your productivity, I think it's well worth it.
See, what they might be looking at is what some companies do is they put, you know, more memory and everything else in a higher-end machine. It doesn't mean that you couldn't get, like, the middle of the road and say it only has a gig. That you could talk to the manufacturer and say, tell you what, bump that up to 2 gig. You're only bumping up the memory, which is a cheaper commodity than also throwing it into the next chip up that's the Cadillac, and you only need the midsize.
And a lot of times upgrading the memory as you're buying it is cheaper than upgrading it later.
Yep.
Right. Now, is there anything that if for some reason I find that this isn't working out, is there an external memory that I could buy?
No, they're external hard drives, but not external RAM.
Yeah, memory.
And many laptops, at least, don't go much beyond 2 gig, not at any reasonable cost.
Yeah.
But 2 gig should be more than enough to open multiple PDF documents, as well as have the operating system and everything else running that you need.
All right, so my next question is, if I come and give you a tune-up or a brake job, can you come to my work and talk them into getting me the 2 gig?
No. Might be able to. Very well might be able to.
Hey, guys, listen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for the laugh. Good luck.
I appreciate what you guys do for us. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
You notice he told us we could come and get a free brake job, and then he didn't tell us where he works. I just want you all to notice that. All right.
Well, he can email us.
We all need to start wandering around all the shops and walk in and say, Joe here, I'm here for my free brake job. All right.
Joe sent me.
Our next caller is Tom from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Well, my question, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Toyota Windows 98, and a couple of weeks ago I bought got a disc from Walmart with photographs on it, and I put it in the machine, and it keeps coming up. This program has performed an illegal operation and will be shut down. And I took the disc out to my grandsons in Ohio. He put it in his machine, and it came up beautifully. Then a couple of days ago, I booked an airline flight on Travelocity, and when I went in to get the confirmation, it came up with the same thing.
How old of a machine is this?
Oh, it's probably 8 or 9.
What browser
Windows
are you
98?
Using?
Yes.
That's what he said.
Yeah, he said.
What web browser are you using?
Let's see. Juno?
Do you know what version it is? Your problem is it's probably a very...
Too old.
Yeah, it's too old of a browser to work with current websites.
Oh.
And the disk that you got probably requires a newer operating system.
For the security purposes of that.
And whatever photo slideshow program they put on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we had with our earlier callers. Just your computer's too old to run modern stuff.
Yeah,
it'll still work fine with older stuff, but you can't run anything current.
Newer.
Yeah.
It is hard for us to say in these economically parlous times that you should spend money on a new computer, but the reality is that the world has passed you by with Windows 98.
I'm sure a long time ago.
And it's time to join the 21st century. It's a whole new century out here.
Or at least the 20th century, you know, find the next P machine.
Right.
And that was our suggestion to the earlier caller, is that you can get a Windows XP machine, which will eventually be able to run Vista as soon as the drivers and programs are updated for that.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't have as much trouble migrating your current applications and current hardware onto an XP machine.
I see. Okay.
Or there's always Mac or Unix, so that's more options. Anything you buy now is going to be a learning curve to what you're used to. So, in fact, Apple's been using sort of that marketing slogan for a while that, yeah, if you're going to have to upgrade to a new OS, you might as well upgrade to a better OS.
Right. Very good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, and good luck with that.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, I have to say that we often get calls like this, and it saddens me to have to tell somebody, you know what, you got to spend money, because a lot of us are not financially able, particularly in these days, but there's no cure for it. The old stuff just isn't going to work. Now, as Steve pointed out, you can certainly put Linux on your old machine. That will run things much differently, but it'll run, you know, it's a new life for old hardware sort of thing. But the truth is that it is time to move up. All right, we are going to take another break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, and me, Nick Francesco. Please give us a call. We've got a couple of lines open. We'll be back just on the other side of everything with the greatest computer show in the known universe, and that is Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Back in a few. Jessica, take it away. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Hey, spammers are now using MP3 attachments named after major recording artists to transmit stock scam messages. Elvis and the Beatles probably never could have imagined they would one day be used to commit stock fraud. But that's exactly what's happening now, because the emails are named after recording artists as part of a pump-and-dump stock scam. Most of the emails have no subject name. Others, however, appear to be named after the artist the MP3 file is named after, according to several security vendors. When recipients click on the attachment, a voice relays a message promoting stock for a particular company. According to security vendor ComTouch, as of the afternoon of October 18th, no viral threats had been identified in these messages. The outbreak began October 17th and accounted for around 7 to 10% of all spam globally over the ensuing 18 hours. We can say with confidence that it's being sent from IP addresses that we know to be also infected with Storm Trojan, so it would be safe to suggest the Storm botnet has been used for this, said Paul Wood, a security analyst at Message Labs. Several security experts noted that it is difficult for a computer to quickly analyze an audio file and judge it to be spam. It's easy to catch in a broad way if you just want to block MP3 attachments, said security researcher Joe Stewart. However, telling the difference between a spam MP3 attachment and, say, a voicemail MP3 sent by some legitimate service is harder. So that makes it more likely that the spammers will get around all that stuff. So just be aware, these MP3 attachments come to you with the name of some recording artist. Generally speaking, just dump them. They aren't a virus,
right,
but they are annoying tax scam or stock scam messages.
Well, and speaking of different scams, this is what my father-in-law sent me from out on the West Coast. You know, you folks, if you get a jury summons, you know, most folks take it pretty serious. But then there's other folks that just could care less, don't want to be bothered. Well, they've got a scam going on right now that these callers are calling saying, well, you didn't report for your jury duty or the summons for jury duty, and you sit there and say, well, I never got it, you know, as most folks are very conscious and don't want to get in trouble. They say, well, you know, to avoid a warrant out for your arrest, we need to verify who you are, so give us your social security number, date of birth. It's a scam, folks. They won't do that, and it's literally a way of getting a lot of people's information, personal information, so that they can steal your identity, and they're doing this in like 11 different states, and it's spreading fast.
Yeah,
so, you know, again, just like banks and everything else, they don't do that. And it should be a green light in everybody's head. The minute they start asking you for social security numbers, red date light. Of birth, or anything else, no, green light to take action.
A red light to not do that.
Yeah. A red light to stop, and then a green light to dump them.
Yeah. Yep. That you should all of a sudden say, all right, tell you what, let me call you back.
Oh, I do that all the time.
Yeah. And they'll hang up on you as fast as you can go.
Can I call you during dinner?
Yeah.
and I have an air horn handy. Yo.
I get people on the phone all the time wanting to sell me stuff or whatever. I'm saying, oh, you've reached me at a very, very bad time. We're having a problem. Please call back later. They'll say, when would be best to call back? And I always say, Thursday at 4 p.m. It is the only time I will answer the phone. And then I hang up.
I heard about a guy, and there's audio on the net, where he, in fact, I knew a guy locally, he'll string the telemarketers along. know, you're caller number 12. You've just won. And we'll string them along and get their information out. And,
yeah.
And there was a guy in the net that, this is Sheriff Johnson of the police department. You know, how long have you been in contact with this, this man? He's, suspected drug kingpin. And the telemarketer on the phone won't hang up because he's so scared.
You're right. I once got somebody on the phone who wanted to give me a credit card. And so they wanted my old, credit card information and my bank account and everything else. And so I'm stringing, I didn't give them any information, I'm stringing along, and finally I started going, oh, this is so great, they won't let me have any credit now. They took away all my credit cards, and they tore them all up, and they said if I got another one, I'd go to jail, and here you are ready to give me one. And the guy's going, click.
Oh.
All right, our next caller, assuming we have time, yes, I think we do, is John from Penfield. Welcome, John, what's your question?
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Sure.
Really appreciate the show.
Thanks.
I got a little bit of a hack. It's more advanced than you want to do on the radio, but a friend of mine had his brand-new HP laptop fall off of his work truck.
Oh!
Shattered the screen and messed the keyboard up a little bit, but you know what happened? He gave it to me. It powers up just fine. Obviously, there's no display, but what I want to do is kind of hack that thing into a desktop tower and use it as my new TiVo box.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Have you had any experience maybe operating a laptop sans the display connection?
Yes, many times.
Most laptops are intended to do that. They'll have a video port on the laptop for like a projector or presentation system, because that's what a lot of business professionals do with their laptops. So just ignore the screen and plug an external monitor into it.
Right.
And use USB keyboard.
Yes, I actually have a laptop that's in very much that situation at work, and it's now a desktop. You plug a monitor into the back, you plug a USB mouse and keyboard into it, and it's a perfectly working machine.
Fantastic. Would it be worth my while to actually take the motherboard and everything out and professionally mount it, or should I just zip tie it into a case?
I suppose you can, but...
The problem is the power supply.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't even bother trying to put it in another case. Just set the laptop there and plug a monitor into it.
Takes up less space.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I mean, what I did was I had a flat panel monitor, and I strapped the laptop to the back of the monitor.
Yeah.
If you're really good and don't mind, tinkering,
it's a little warm that way.
You could take the computer apart and physically remove the broken screen, but you don't need to bother doing that.
What's the point?
Yeah.
I mean, all you need to do is plug the thing in and then set it so that when you close the case, it doesn't shut the machine down.
Got it.
And then close the case.
I got a new dual core then, guys.
There you go.
Right on.
Next time your friend drops one off the truck, have him call me.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna ask him to keep all of his new laptops on the hood of his truck.
Yeah.
But the other thing you can do and
go over in his house and paint on the hood overnight a big accent right. Leave laptop here.
Yeah. The other thing you can do and we've seen people do this and heard of people doing this is you can look on eBay or any of the other auction sites or sales sites for a similar model computer that's broken differently. Maybe you'll find one with a broken logic board, and then you put the two together and get a working computer.
Right.
Nice. Good advice, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
And this guy just fell into something very sweet, didn't he? That's kind of nice, actually.
Dual core? Sweet.
Yeah. Our next caller is Jerry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's your question?
Hey, guys. This is one I've never seen before. I got an email from eBay saying from a buyer. And the email was like, where's my item? I sent you the money, and you told me about a shipping date. And totally legit looking. And, I mean, I have everything, every antivirus, anti-spam, everything.
Sure.
I'm on Mozilla. When I went to eBay the day before and purchased something. Now, how do they get that information that fast? You know, it almost looked like it had my name on it and everything. The only thing that was missing, it said to authenticate, so you know this is a real eBay email, your sign-in information is on the top. And then on the top it wasn't, and you're supposed to click there and then sign in. So they go through all that just to get your sign-in information.
Right.
Yes.
And then they'll start
exactly
buying things on your account and your PayPal account until you complain.
Wow. Yeah. Never, ever click on a link in an email from eBay. Always go
from anywhere.
From anywhere. But go to eBay yourself and sign in.
Yeah.
And see what's going on that way. Never click on the link.
I forwarded it right to their
good for you.
Their fraud thing. But this was probably one of the most sophisticated ones I've seen. It was really well done.
Yeah,
really.
I actually got a very similar one about a week ago, except I don't have an eBay account. So I was pretty sure it was a scam.
He got me the day after I bought a rug. So I figured, oh, wow, they must
And that's why they target eBay, because they know it's so huge and there's so many millions of people doing
activity.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I got a new variant on the Nigerian 419 scam. It's from a British attorney on behalf of a British citizen who was working for Shell in some little country somewhere that just got deposed. And so he's got 45 million British pounds locked up in the bank.
Oh, that's about 90 million American dollars. That's
and,
not bad.
And so it says right on it, I need your help. This is not spam.
Oh, yeah, right. I was just born at night, last night.
And they're only asking for phone number to start with.
Yes, that's how they start.
Yeah.
They'll reel you in. Jerry, thank you so much. That's good. That's a good piece of information to tell all our folks.
All right, thanks.
Thanks.
And for everyone else, if you get a message like that, forward it to spoof@ebay.com, S-P-O-O-F, and they can investigate it, and they might be able to track down who's doing it.
Right. But in general, never, ever, ever click on a link in an email that would take you to any account where you have to sign in. I don't care if it's your bank or eBay or Yahoo or any place else, never ever click on the link. If you think it's legit, go to the site on your browser and enter, you know, sign in by hand to the real site. And that's the only way to prevent yourself from getting caught by these spammers who are trying to steal your information. We are going to take another quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Jessica Sawyer, who's doing a phenomenal job in that booth all by herself. Poor person. And me, Nick Francesco. We will be back on the other side with, of course, Story Hour with Uncle Dave and pretty much everything else we normally do on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbikes on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 51 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbikes. All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Go get your footy jammies on, grab your mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle on the floor around the old rocking chair. And if we can slap him awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave?
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Dave!
Well, this music was a little bit better than it would.
Yeah, you woke up by itself.
That stuff
I still enjoy slapping you.
Puts me back to sleep. Well, you know, this is kind of in going with what we've been talking about, and it's funny, we've already had two callers today. Not that I like being the bearer of bad news, but I had just a client this week, had to go out to her house because she bought a brand new printer. And you get out there, and of course, all the new printers nowadays are all USB.
Right.
And here she had a machine that was like 8, 9 years old, running Windows, ready for this, 95.
Yep.
And said, sorry, it just isn't going to work. She goes, but this machine does me very well. I understand that.
See, some of it is it's like dog years, you know, in computer years.
Yeah.
It's not that old. It's only 6 or 7 years old. Yeah. Well, it's about 10 computer years for a human year. So, you know, that's 70, 80 years old. That's a huge...
Right, it's multiple generations back. Yeah.
The problem is, folks, I know some folks are on limited income and everything else. I happen to point her towards... I know Dell used to do it, and a few of the other companies used to do refurbs. So you could call their 800 number and ask for a refurb unit, where somebody got one in or they traded up or whatever. So, you know, you can check into that to get them a little bit cheaper. But you definitely got to get out of the Windows 95 and 98, like those other two callers that we had before.
And Windows XP.
I don't even mention that one anymore. Because you know what? That one is almost looking better than Vista.
Yeah! Whoa!
Yeah. I never thought I'd say it, but I mean... You know, Windows ME was never supported, and I get that.
Right.
But here, you're bringing out Vista, and like I keep trying to tell folks, when we went from 98 to XP, there was good reasons to. It took advantage of all the memory that you threw at it, no more 128 meg limit. It did NTFS FAT, right. And it just ran better and faster. Now, going from XP to Vista, what are the benefits? You got to buy more memory.
You got to spend money.
And a lot of that, you buy better graphics, faster processor to do fluff.
Yep.
And that's all you're doing is fluff and eye candy. There is no big compelling reason like we say week after week. So that's why I still tell these folks, Yes, you got to upgrade. Because, matter of fact, this is one of the lady's concerns. She goes, yeah, but those new machines, they want so much for them. And I've been told a lot of stuff won't work for it because she listens to the show and she talks to other folks.
Yes, that's true, unfortunately.
And, well, she says, and I know you guys aren't lying, and this is no lie. She says, one of her friends just got stuck with a new laptop, and she was trying to hook it up to her new printer that was only a year old, and it won't work. And her daughter was having problems with iTunes working under Vista. And, you know, it just keeps snowballing, and a lot of her other software that was working fine under XP won't work now under Vista.
And you know, we know people are price conscious, but you have to be really wary of the $299 or $399 deals you see at the big superstores.
That's what you pay for.
Right. Typically, there's not enough RAM to run the system it comes with. The hard drive is really small, may not have things in it that you need. That's a great price for what it is, but you just have to be very careful about what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a local company, probably a couple of them, Rochester Computer Recycling, accepts electronic equipment to be recycled. They also sell recycled equipment. You know, we mentioned earlier, you get 10 broken computers, and using the parts, you can get 3 good ones out of it. But one of the dangers of buying a recycled or reconditioned computer is that you sort of don't know why it was reconditioned in the first place. Check their warranty. The big name stores do it as well. You see a lot of machines in the reconditioned market after trade shows.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a rental car. You can buy rental cars after the rental period is up. But I've rented cars. I know how people drive rental cars.
And how you drove.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can fix the computer.
That
so
gas
I probably
pedal
would.
Is right through the floorboards. Yep. There's a big indent in the...
Yeah, I probably would buy a used reconditioned computer because I can fix it.
Yeah.
But for someone else, it's a tougher decision.
Yep.
Right, I have a friend who fixes cars all the time, and I'm always, you know... Oh, well, I just bought this and it was real cheap. Well, yeah, it was real cheap because you're going to put sweat equity into it.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to get in it, turn the car on, and go somewhere.
So, you know, folks, yeah, I know, again, bottom line, you know, you love your 98 machine or even in this one case, this 95 machine, but those days are over.
You could have put a USB card in it, but can you find 95 drivers?
Well, that's
the problem there is
there's no USB on 95.
No, it was ISA.
95C. Oh, she didn't even have PCI.
No, it's ISA.
Right. So for those of you who don't know the difference, the ports in the back, the thing you plug the cards into, is a different format in the old days than it is nowadays. And finding a card that fits into that different old format would, I think, be a little difficult nowadays.
Well, what problems we run into now, especially in the Mac world, is that Apple keeps adding newer and newer stuff. It's one thing Apple has done is... Microsoft is a little more cautious about obsoleting older equipment, where Apple just does it. And so we've gone from PCI cards to PCI-X, and now PCI Express, which is a really, really fast, great interface, but it means all your old PCI cards won't work, and you have to buy new PCI Express cards.
Right. Yep. But that's okay because Steve Jobs told you it was okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on the PC world, they'll put PCI Express. Typically, your graphic card is in the Express slot. But then they'll throw some PCI in there also for the older cards.
Yeah, that would have been nice if Apple had done that, mixed and mingled.
Part of the thing, well, they did with PCI-X. The PCI and PCI-X, the machines had both on them, but now the PCI-Express, it's only PCI-Express. But the big thing is that everything is built into the Mac. You almost don't need any cards.
But if you need a card, you are constrained.
Yeah. Well, see, now we run into a similar issue with people trying to run old SCSI scanners. A PCI Express SCSI card is like $600 because it's designed for a server architecture and it's quad channel and does 300 megabytes per second. And I just want to run my 8-bit scanner.
Yeah, right.
Oops.
All right.
So you buy a new scanner for $100.
All right. It looks like we're going to have to sedate both Uncle Dave and Cousin Steve. Today we'll get them back in their rocking chairs. So wash out your cocoa mugs. Go put your clothes back on and go on about your business, because that's the end of Uncle Dave's segment for the day. I apologize to all of you who are on the line. Please hold on. We get to the other side of the news. We do the poll and all of that stuff. We will get back to you as soon as possible. In the meantime, we'll be back on the other side of the news and the weather and the sports and all the things you really listen to Wham for with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, and me, Nick Francesco. You are indeed listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. At 59 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM, and we will be back on the other side of the news, so stay tuned and hang on if you're on the line. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And
Jessica Sawyer.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbite. Every week we do a poll on Soundbite. Last week's poll was based on a story that Microsoft is updating the self-update to Microsoft. 257 of you voted for the poll, making it a four-way tie for 247th place. Thanks for each and every one of you who voted. And the poll was about, has Microsoft updated behind your back? 45% of you said yes. 20% of you said no, followed by Linux. Oh, like I pay attention, and the Mac. This week's poll is based on an interesting story. A password-stealing Trojan is targeting Skype, the voice over internet protocol, voice over IP, VOIP, VoIP, however you want to pronounce it, posing as a security plugin for the popular VoIP and IM service and displaying a fake login screen. It's almost identical to the real thing. McAfee's Avert Labs is identifying the Trojan as PWS Pikes? Who cares? The point here is there's about five or six different names for this thing. I wish these people would get together and give it the same name so we all know who we're talking about. The Trojan, which identifies itself as a plugin called Skype Defender, is attempting to steal Skype usernames and passwords along with all usernames and passwords saved in Internet Explorer. Huh. Internet Explorer vulnerable, huh? Okay, according to a blog, who knew? According to a blog posted on October 17th by Avert Labs, headquartered in Santa Clara, California, the malware isn't spreading by itself. Rather, its author is posting it on dodgy sites or forums and relying on users to be tricked into executing it. After execution, the Trojan disables running instances of Skype and swaps in its fake Skype login window. If the victim enters a username and password, the malware captures them and any others saved in IE and posts the information via HTTP to a website for the malware and author to retrieve. One way to distinguish Skype's real login from Skype Defender's bogus version is that none of the hyperlinks work in the fake login screen. However, most people don't necessarily check. They just enter their names, log in, boom, they get their password stolen. Another way to distinguish the phony login screen is that its sign-in button has a metallic gray border, whereas Skype's legitimate login screen has a red border. Yeah, people will notice that right away.
You'd think the guy that wrote this would have faked it better.
Yeah, apparently he didn't. So, our question this week is, I use Skype, and the choices are all the time, I've tried it, no thanks, and what is this Skype you speak of? So far, we've got 74 votes, most of whom are saying no thanks. Skype is, of course, a way to do phone calls over the internet. You get to voice communicate with someone, and now video communicate if you have the newer versions, someone over the internet. Hey, notice that at the bottom of that poll, after you voted, you'll see a yellow box. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. And you can leave an opinion and then check out what goes on my website. I send out a newsletter with tips and tricks and website of the week and rants and raves and questions and answers and all kinds of stuff like that. So I think it's, I personally believe it's well worth $15 a year and recommend it highly. Okay. But then come on back to the Soundbites page. Check out our forums where some of the wackiest people on earth hang out all day, every day. In the meantime, of course, we're still running the Soundbites chat. And we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Debbie from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Debbie. What's your question?
Yes, I'm having a lot of trouble with my computer.
What seems to be the problem?
It'll shut off on me for no reason. It will, the monitor... We'll just have all these lines going through it, and it freezes.
How old of a machine is it?
I think I had it about 4 years.
Okay, a couple of things. First.
What OS?
Well, no. I want to start with hardware.
Mm-hmm.
You've had this about 4 years. Is it a desktop or a laptop?
Desktop.
Do you have electricity problems in your house? That is to say, every once in a while, do you see the lights dim or, you know, the TV flickers?
No.
Like when the refrigerator goes on or somebody starts a hairdryer or something like that?
No.
Okay. All right, now go on to the operating system.
Well, even though it's a four-year-old computer, it could be something starting to die.
Yeah, it actually
especially
could.
If it hasn't been cleaned out in a while.
Well, it's a myriad of symptoms. You know, shutting off could be the power supply, lines on the monitor could be the video card.
Yep.
So it's
needs a diagnostic test done on it.
It could be overheating as well.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If it hasn't been cleaned out and
the fan, and I...
Open the chassis and take a vacuum cleaner to it.
Yeah.
That could help if it's overheating.
And shutting down. Does it go on just for a few minutes and then shuts right off?
I could be on it for a couple minutes. I could be on it for 40 minutes. And then sometimes I'll try to turn it back on, and it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, you might want to take that in and have it diagnostic. Just to have them check it out, like you say, with the video card and that type of stuff, just to verify that everything is running smoothly.
Okay.
Which it isn't right now, so nope. It's a cheap way to just get it tested out and give you some kind of peace of mind in what direction to go with it.
Right.
Debbie, in what room of the house is it?
I have like a little playroom that it's in.
Is it near a window? Is it drafty?
It is near a window, but... No, it's not drafty in here.
All right, well, one thing is it could be if it's in direct sunlight, that could help it overheat. Where I was going with this was temperature extremes, going too hot and then too cold. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly over the summer we've had.
Turning off and not turning back on immediately is definitely
heat-related
because it has to cool off before it'll turn back on.
Yeah, it's definitely time to go get this looked at. It might be that there's a fan that's too slow or that it stopped somewhere.
The bearings in the fan might have just gone.
Right.
Yeah, because I hear something sometimes like running really fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's time to take it in for some diagnostics. Sorry, okay. Debbie.
Do you have any suggestions where to take that to?
Well, oddly, we do.
Gee. You can try my shop, which is NRAPC. We're at 70 Empire Boulevard. A half mile up the road from Dan's Crafts near Culver. We're open Monday through Friday from 9 to 5.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Debbie.
Good luck. It's going to cost her all of $32.40 for a diagnostic.
Right, and then something else needs to be done, that'll be separate.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is John from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi. I've got a couple nuisance icons on the bottom bar over to the right of my Windows XP screen, and they appeared after I got a kind of a program that showed up on my computer telling me that I could have viruses and I ought to look into a program that can take care of all my viruses.
That probably was a virus.
Yeah. Well,
spyware.
I never opened it or anything like that. I went in, tracked down the programs, and eliminated them from the computer. But I have these two icons that I can't seem to get rid of, and they keep just switching between a question mark and a disk drive, and they
Hold on. Let's start with what they are.
Well, I got a great one that'll clean a lot of this junk up. I have a new one that, in fact, I was going to tell you guys about. It's called Super Anti-Spyware.
Oh.
And I've been running this now all week. And even though the stuff we recommend, finding with Edward and Spybot, super anti-spyware, finds even more.
Wow.
And these ones that are doing this, putting programs on there and saying, oh, you need this to get cleaned up because you're infected and all that other, and puts these other bogus icons on there, cleans them all up.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do. I think I got rid of all the spyware.
Try looking for this program.
SuperAntiSpyware.com.
Yep. And
okay. Now, just the name makes me suspect.
Yeah, I know. But, no, it does a great job. We've been cleaning up a number of machines, and I really like the program. It puts a little, looks like beetle down in the toolbar that lets you know that it's working. And it's fantastic.
A lot of times, spyware can get infested in your system and put little icons up in your taskbar. Usually they don't because they want to remain hidden. But they're very tricky to remove. A lot of times, if you can go into Add Remove Control Panel, you can remove programs that are known. Or if you can go into MS Config, you can remove startup items that are trying to start up. Now, if you right-click on one of these unknown icons, does it say anything like About or Settings or Open?
Not anymore, because it seems the first thing I did was I went on looking for the properties because I didn't trust where they came from.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And while the program was still resident on the computer, it would tell me stuff, but it really didn't tell me a lot of stuff, so I didn't trust them. After I got rid of the programs, nothing comes up on the icons when I right-click.
Right, so you've removed the program, but it didn't remove the taskbar icon.
Right.
So try this program and see if that helps.
Zoom!
Okay.
For anti-spyware!
Thanks for your help, guys.
Thanks. Yeah, we've been running it, like I say, for a couple about a week and a half now, and I've been very impressed with it, and thinking of adding it to the Soundbite CD.
There you go. It seems to do nice things.
Yeah.
Updates are by hand unless you pay for it.
Yep.
But that's, you know, one of the...
Different than the Adaware and the SpyBot. I mean, those two.
All right, our next caller is Bill from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. That Super Anti-Spyware is free?
Yeah. There is a free version, but take a look at the site. If you go to the site and they download the free version, it shows you the difference and what you don't get for free.
Yeah, it's free for personal use, for home users. The professional commercial version is only $30.
Okay. I had a couple questions. The first one is, I'm an unemployed IT professional. Most of my background has been software testing, contracts here and there at Kodak and Xerox. I tried to verge over into help desk, which is what I really want to do. Got a little bit of experience with that and was also laid off with that.
Right.
I'm on the cusp of saying, all right, it's time to go get that A+, network plus, security plus. Because I have a degree. I have 7 years overall IT experience. It's a liberal arts degree, but still, I think the experience goes really good. Along with that, I have military experience, and I'm thinking that if I get all these certifications, that might be the other eye-opener key into some of the... What I want is a direct job. I don't want a contract anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know about that.
But almost a lot of times, too many certifications is bad because, unfortunately, most companies are looking for cheap, not good. So you have too many certifications, you probably want too much money.
Well, the experience will definitely help, you know. But like Steve is saying, you know, too much certification can overqualify you.
Yeah, unless the job you're going for specifically says A+ or Network Plus or Security Plus. You know, it depends on the interviewer. Some of them will say, oh, this is great because it shows he's a go-getter and yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
Other people will say, well, he's going to want a lot more money.
Remember, Dave? You and I used to teach the A+ classes, and we're not A+ ourselves.
Well, we've been doing
it
so long.
Classes, yeah.
Yeah. That's where, you know, if you came to personally me and said you got A+ certification, you've been working on computers, I'd be more concerned about, you know, how much practical experience. That A+ certification doesn't mean squat to me.
Right, yeah. I know anyone can read a book and pass a test.
Yeah, right.
I think with everything I have, that might be a couple more keys and a couple more doors.
It really can't hurt.
Yeah.
In general, it can't hurt.
I mean, as far as the money, I mean, when I contract right now, I can look at $15 to $18 an hour, but it's contract. I could be done in 3 months. I could be done in 6 months. I could be done in 20 days.
Yeah. You've been done in a week.
Exactly.
Oh, I know exactly how it is.
And so one of the other things I was going to ask is, I know, like, is it Bob Enright? Or is it Dave?
Dave.
I'm looking into maybe trying to do some volunteer work, like in a repair shop, just so I can get a little more of that type of A+ knowledge. And
Email Dave at David Enright PC. We got to take a break back in just a couple of minutes. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbite. Hey, those folks of you who are owners of Google stock, rejoice. Less than 2 weeks after its stock price smashed through $600 for the first time, Google showed why it might not be long before the internet search leader shares are flirting with $700 a share. Even with more people enjoying the summer weather instead of surfing the web, Google churned out another quarter of astounding earnings and revenue growth, likely to propel its stock to new heights. The third quarter results surpassed analyst expectations and demonstrated why Google has emerged as Silicon Valley's most prized company with a market share of about $200 billion with a B dollars after just 9 years in business. Investors are happy too. Google shares climbed another $6.14 to finish the regular session on Friday at $639.62. In the third quarter, Google earned $1.7 billion. That's $3.38 per share for the 3 months that ended in September. It's just astonishing. Even after subtracting commissions paid to its thousands of advertising partners, Google's revenue stood at $3.01 billion. That's about $70 million above the average analyst estimate. No wonder Google is someday going to own the world.
I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about this new search engine came on and wanted, you know, wanted them to talk about it on the airs. Well, yeah, we just got $12 million in funding.
Yeah, that's an hour for Google.
Yeah, what was that? $200 billion for Google?
Yeah, in terms of Google, for a quarter, they earned $1.07 billion. Billion with a B for a quarter. Nice. Nice work if you can get it. Our next caller is Vince from East Rochester, New York. Welcome, Vince.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I got a Dell Dimension 8100 Limited that I picked up around 2000, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
There's only two sticks of memory. It was got the 128 kilobytes in it.
Okay.
And the other two are filled. They just got dummy spots in them. And it's a 1.6 gigahertz machine. Is it worth updating that? Because I've seen on Dell's website that you can update that to like a 2.6, and you can obviously can buy the memory sticks for that. Is that worth doing?
Yes and no.
What do you use the computer for?
Mostly for school right now.
What types of programs?
I'm running MATLAB on it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
MATLAB, yes. Absolutely, yes.
MATLAB, yes. Photoshop, yes. Final Cut, yes.
Does
yes.
that take RIM?
Microsoft Word, no.
No.
Does that take RIM memory?
Yeah, you have to be really careful about what kind of memory it is. If it's SIMS,
well,
or DIMS,
if I buy it right
RIMS.
Off site. I was going to buy it right off the site.
Right. If you buy it from Dell, you pay a premium, but you'll get the right memory the first time.
Yeah, just so you know what you're doing.
Right.
Because I tried buying some from somebody else, and it doesn't fit. The slots are different.
Right. Well, yeah, you bought the right kind, yeah. There's
like,
SIMS,
oh, man.
SIMS and DIMS and RIMS and DDR1, DDR2.
Do these have, like, little metal jackets on them?
They do, yes.
All right, and then there's two. Then you've got two other slots where there's cards in there, but they're, like, blank circuit boards?
Correct.
Yeah, that's RIM memory.
Which is very uncommon these days. It never caught on.
I'll tell you what. If you're looking for memory and want to upgrade it, come by my shop.
Okay.
Or email me, because I think I got a couple sticks of RIM, and I can make you a good deal.
I just did a Google search on it, and one company is selling a 512 RAM for $600, and another company is selling a 512 RAM for $200.
Yeah, RIM memory is quite expensive.
You're out of an empire, right?
Yeah.
All righty, I'll stop over.
All right,
thanks,
there you
guys.
Go. Yep. Thanks, Vince. Our next caller is John from Rochester, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. Windows XP machine, I can't remember the administrator password. I just want to do msconfig to change a couple startups. How do you find that again?
You don't.
Can you delete it and redo it?
You can delete Windows and reinstall Windows.
I don't want to do that.
I have read about programs on the internet that claim to be able to break your password, but who knows how secure they are.
Well, if you're getting into the account, are you also the administrator?
I can't remember that password either.
But are you getting into your account?
Oh, I use a machine all the time.
Well, then you can just go in and remove the password under your account.
If your account is also an admin, you don't have to go into the administrator account to do things.
Okay.
If you are only a regular user, then yes, you have to go into the admin account.
So you can go in and you can literally go in. If you're an admin, if you go into the control panel under users and you look at your name, your icon, and pull that up. And if you want, you can delete that password. You can also look at any of the other accounts if they have passwords on them and delete those.
Okay. Okay, yeah, because I tried to do it just to the msconfig under my sign on it. It doesn't work.
Yeah, then you're probably not an admin, which is actually correct. You shouldn't run as an admin every day. It limits the amount of damage that you and anything you collect off the internet can do to your machine.
Right. Okay, yeah, because I bought it to a friend at work, and they set it up at the office, and they can't remember the password they used either.
Well, I'm sorry. There are some programs that purport to do that. I don't know that I would trust their provenance, as we say, antiquities trade.
Not the end of the world.
Sorry.
All righty.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Yes, thank you. This is a cautionary tale for the rest of you. You should be very aware of what your administrator password is, write it down, seal it in an envelope, stick it in a drawer somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all talk about not writing down passwords, but the reality is that we're all just human. And one thing I advocate, particularly in a business setting, seal all your passwords in an envelope, scrawl your name across the back so you can see whether or not it was opened or whatever that's all about. And then put it somewhere safe.
Yep.
Because that's the only way. I admit it, I use like 42 systems every day and I remember all the passwords. Fine. But if you don't use it regularly, you sit there going, I don't know. So definitely, if for your admin passwords, write them down, set them. And also, under your username, don't run as the administrator. Create a username for yourself and run under that. And definitely make sure that person is not an administrator. It will limit the amount of damage you do to your machine when you catch something bad. All right, our next caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. What's up, Ed?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I was listening to your call earlier in the show when you were talking about the different operating systems, and it amazed me how far Microsoft has gone to make it difficult for the average consumer. I'd highly recommend to all your listeners to go on a swap sheet or something, find themselves an old computer, and load an old system like ME or Windows 2000 and compare it to what XP and Vista does. You'll be amazed how much faster the system will boot up. It'll be able to run all your programs. People seem to forget that it's all about output. You want to print a document or you want to search for a document. This eye candy and stuff, I mean, would you read a book with transparent pages? I mean, why in the world would you want to have transparent pages scrolling through your screens? It's ridiculous. You'll be able to do everything you want with the older operating systems. And I know you guys have to be careful what you say because Microsoft is a pretty powerful organization.
But it's not that.
Yeah,
I don't care. You can run an older operating system if you want, but you're not going to be able to run a new program on it. You have to run old programs. You're not going to get the newest security updates.
Website might not let you in.
A lot of websites don't work with older browsers, so there are limitations that you have to be aware of if you're running an older system.
How many servers out there, the ones that are actually handling your program and handling the Internet, are actually running XP and Vista? How many are actually running 2000 Pro?
None. They're all running Unix.
Oh, they're all running Unix. But, okay.
Right. Well, but I agree with you in that if a computer is just a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And if the tool works that you've got, people are very reluctant to upgrade. The problem comes when you want to change the tool, when you want to buy that new printer or that new scanner, or you want a USB connection that your old machine won't handle. Those are when the problems come in.
Yeah.
But you're right. On a day-to-day basis, I'll tell you what, up until very recently, the laptop I took with me to meetings to take notes in was an old 286 because it was very tiny, very thin, very light. I could just stick it in my bag, type up my notes, and it was all running damn small Linux, and I could then send them off to another machine for your storage later.
My old 72 Dodge Monaco I drove in college, I had to give it up because you can't buy leaded gasoline anymore.
Yeah, right. it's the same idea, but you're absolutely right. As long as the tool works for you, there's no reason to move on.
My biggest question has to do with wireless. I've heard of a number of different outfits advertised, like Clearwire now and a few of the other ones. Do you guys have any recommendations as far as wireless Internet connection? You know, what might be available in the future if you have any privy to what the industry's doing?
Well, there are a couple of things going on. I know there are at least two groups, and I think maybe three, that are trying to get municipal wireless put into Rochester. So no matter where you go, you have a wireless signal.
And that's using the Wi-Fi standard that you can buy now, comes built into most computers.
Mm-hmm.
You put your own wireless router in your house, and then it works fine around your house.
Right. The problem is there's a lot of political objection to that from the people who are making their living by selling Internet access. My feeling is the person who jumps on that bandwagon and makes it happen takes the business away from everybody else, but I'm not seeing that happening a lot. In terms of wireless cards, they're all about the same right now. One might be a little faster. One might have wider coverage. The industry is in the process of shaking out, so whatever you buy right now is pretty much a crapshoot.
Thank you.
Sure. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich. Sorry, Jessica Sawyer, I'm choked up just thinking of her. I get choked up.
Yeah, the wonderful thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from.
Exactly. I apologize. I'm Nick Francesco. It is 36 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. I'll try to clear out before we come back or die. One of the two is going to happen. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jessica Sawyer.
And at 40 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbite. Time Warner Inc.'s internet unit, AOL, will eliminate 2,000 jobs as part of an ongoing restructuring to better focus on boosting online advertising. The cuts, which began on Tuesday, amount to about 1/5 of AOL's global workforce and are spread across operations in the United States and in Europe, where the company has sold off its internet access businesses. AOL plans to boost investment in higher growth areas such as advertising in new international regions, according to AOL Chief Executive Randy Falco. AOL will launch in 7 new countries this year and will operate in 30 countries by the end of 2008. Some unidentified senior executives will leave as part of the restructuring. It looks like they are getting rid of a whole bunch of people, so I'm not entirely certain what that means as far as everything else goes. A lot of Wall Street analysts and investors have demanded that Time Warner sell or split off AOL into its own separate company. The company said it has no plans to do that.
Maybe that wasn't such a good idea after all.
Buying him?
Yeah, buying AOL. Yeah. Now, did AOL buy Time Warner or did Time Warner buy AOL? How did it work?
That's a lovely question, but I don't know. But I do know that Time Warner is the parent company. So I suppose whichever way it happened, that's legally the way it works. And so Time Warner has the option to sell off or split off AOL again. We bought them just long enough to cost us bucket loads of money, and now we'll split them off again. That makes sense to me. Okay, our next caller is Jack from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's your question?
I'm pretty sure my hard drive on my computer is crashed.
Okay.
I don't know. I was wondering if there's a way I can reload my operating system onto it.
Well, you wouldn't want to if the drive is crashed.
If the drive is no good, you don't want to put it back on there.
Okay, so you just got to get another one then?
Well, yeah. you want to have that hard drive tested out to see if there are any bad sectors.
If there's data on it you want to recover, or you can test the drive for bad sectors, a great program is called SpinRite from GRC.com. The interesting thing is it's, $70, $80 to buy it, or you can buy a new hard drive for $70, $80.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Right.
But the nice thing about SpinRite, well, if you take it to somebody like Dave or Steve, they can hook it up as the second drive in it. Let's say you go to Dave or Steve and say, I want to buy a hard drive from you, and can you retrieve any of my data from the old hard drive?
Okay.
What they'll do is they'll take that new hard drive. You have to bring them your version of Windows, of course, but they'll format it and do everything like that. And then they'll take the old data, if they can, take the old data off of the old drive and put it on the new drive.
It depends on how badly crashed the old drive
is. Right, but at least they're willing to give it a try, and that would help.
And, of course, we shouldn't need to recover data because you have a good backup, right?
Of course you do.
Okay.
But in general, when your drive crashes, drives are so cheap, don't bother with it because it crashed once. It's going to crash again, probably worse later.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times we hear from callers who say, my drive made a funny noise a couple of weeks ago, and now my computer won't boot. It won't burn either.
My computer won't
burn. Right. So, if you'd have done something about it a couple of weeks ago and it made the funny noise, you may not have lost all your stuff.
Yeah, right.
It's kind of like a car. You'll listen to it. If it sounds different, there's probably something going wrong.
Mm-hmm. And, kiddies, this cautionary tale is to remind you to back up today.
I used to tell my customers, no backup, no sympathy.
Yeah, that's the way I do it. Absolutely. Our next caller is Frank from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question about a partition drive in my laptop. I have partitioned it using Norton Partition Magic 8, and what I'd like to do is reinstall my operating system from my shipped CDs and also save the partition data. I want to ensure that when I aim the re-imaging at the C drive, that my partition D drive will remain intact.
What brand computer is it?
It is a Toshiba satellite.
A lot of the restore disks will erase the drive, repartition it the way they want, and restore. If it's just a Windows install disk, then
you have control.
Yeah, you have control of where to put it.
Okay, so if I do that, I also have a Windows install CD. If I put that in, aim it at the C drive, I can...
Theoretically, that should work.
Yep.
Of course, you will make double backups of all of your data before you try that, won't you?
Of course. We've just broached that subject, haven't we?
There, yes, we have. Yes, indeed, we have. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you. Bye.
And that's yet another reminder. I know that there's a whole bunch of you saying, I'll do that later this afternoon, and you won't. If you are home right now, go start your backup immediately. I know that when I get home, I will. I back up every night. I back up
yesterday.
Every night at 2 a.m. Every morning at 2 a.m. I'm backing up. Of course, I'm on a Linux box, so I just automated it. And think about
my 200 gig backup drive is getting full because I put a 500 gig drive in my computer.
Yeah,
now I got to get a bigger backup drive.
I back up to my network system at work. I don't even fool around with a local backup. I've got off-site backup. All right, we're going to take another break. But we will be back in just what?
Mr. Francis Ford Coppola, his house got broken into. They stole his computer. They stole his backup drive sitting next to the
That's
computer.
That's why you keep it somewhere else. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Reich, Chris Reich, Jessica Sawyer, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 46 minutes after the hour. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbite. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Reich.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Jess Sawyer.
And at 50 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbite. Hey, here's a terrific idea. In a spectacular case of missing the point, Universal Records plans to combat declining sales by releasing singles in a new and more expensive format, USB memory sticks. It seems somebody told them the kids aren't buying CDs because they use computers to get the music for free, but they stopped listening around the word computers and decided to see how they could get money from that idea. The result is singles released on USB memory sticks expected to cost twice what an entire CD would cost. Now, White Stripes did this. They produced an album, a double album, on two memory sticks. But it was more expensive than a CD, but not by much. And they sold a bunch of them. But that was an entire album.
And you can reuse the memory stick when you're done.
And you can reuse the memory stick, and it came in little cute pictures of them. So that was, you know, kind of neat. But a single for 15 or 18 bucks? I think not.
I think the band was Pearl Jam. I could be mistaken, but I remember hearing about a concert tour.
Uh-huh.
The band was actually providing recordings of the concert available for sale on USB sticks.
Yes.
As the people were leaving the concert.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
To combat the bootleggers, obviously.
Yes, to combat the bootleggers. And that worked, again, because it wasn't that much more expensive. But they weren't singles. I'm not going to pay 18 bucks for a single. Even if the song is good, which so very many of them are not anymore.
Right.
So I think this is just really not going to be doing that. That's just ridiculous.
Well, in related news, Apple is now playing catch up with the Amazon Music Store selling unprotected DRM-free songs for as little as 89 cents.
Right.
Apple lowered the price of their unprotected songs. Used to be $1.29. They lowered it to 99 cents.
Right.
So now you can buy the protected version for 99 cents or the unprotected higher quality version for 99 cents.
Or the unprotected higher quality version for 89 cents on Amazon.
Not all of them are 89 cents. That's the one advantage iTunes has, is that all the songs are 99 cents. So now there's a place to look. Look at Amazon, see if it's cheaper, or get it from iTunes.
Right.
So it's the competition is spurring prices.
Right. Before we get back to the phones, on the chat, on the Soundbite chat, Arkney 53 says that for the person who's called looking for a computer job, there was one fitting his qualifications posted on the Rung group at groups.yahoo.com. It's a free Rochester-based job site. All it takes is a Yahoo account. So
get out.
Particularly for who was that looking at? Whoever was looking for a job. Oh, that was Bill. Check that out, Bill. Our next caller is, hurry up, Dave, Sue from Acton in New York. Welcome, Sue. What's your question?
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Media Center. I wondered if you could give me any hints on why it freezes all the time.
It's Windows.
I knew he was going to say that. That's why I waited.
Or the more generic, something is wrong somewhere.
Yeah, there are a number of reasons why Media Center would freeze. Does it freeze just for a few seconds or completely and you have to reboot it?
Completely, normally when I've recorded something and I'm trying to play it back, completely, and then you have to just shut it down.
Okay, it's either a hardware problem, which is going to need somebody like Dave or Steve to take a look at it, or you don't have enough memory.
Yeah.
Okay.
How much RAM do you have in that machine?
It's a new gateway. It's got quite a bit, and it's got the F1 processor on it. I'm not exactly sure how much is on it right now.
And that's another confusion that comes up. Quite a bit of RAM used to be 128 megs.
You're right.
Yeah. Now 1 gig minimum, 2 gigs is better.
Yeah, for Media Center, you really want 2 gigs.
Okay, I believe it has 2 gigs on it.
How long a recording are you doing? 5 minutes or 5 hours?
An hour. You know, like
two gigs may not be enough for an hour.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and it also depends on how full your hard drive is and a whole bunch of things. You really need, I'm afraid, to take this into somebody and have them do some diagnostics on it.
Okay.
Sorry.
Oh, basically more memory, though, probably, right?
Well, yeah. Not until somebody does the diagnostics. It's better to, like, take it to Dave and spend the $35 and find that out for sure than to fix something that doesn't need fixing.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes, bye-bye.
All right. Our next caller is Monroe from Henrietta. Welcome, Monroe. What's your question?
I got two questions on Microsoft Office. One, in Excel, I try to copy something. Highlight a cell and right-click it and say copy. The border flashes for a second and then stops flashing, and it won't copy. If I right-click it again and hit copy again, then it works. Any suggestion on that?
What happens if you use the copy command from the edit menu or the keyboard equivalent?
I haven't tried those.
Try those and see if they work. Normally, if you click on a cell, type Control-C, and then click on another cell and type Control-P.
V.
I meant,
V.
What did I say?
P.
P, no, V. It'll copy and then immediately paste, and that's actually faster than what you're doing. But how do you know it doesn't work? When you go to paste, nothing's there?
Yeah. Second time I do it, the little border stays flashing or whatever you call it, but not the first time.
I have never seen that problem before.
Okay.
We'll look into it, but definitely do me a favor and try the other two, you know, the pull-down menu from the top menu.
And a little harder question in Word.
Yeah.
I have an old file out of WordPerfect years ago that I pulled over trying to put a label at the bottom of a page. Labels. Different labels on every page, just a label I can put on a clipboard. And footnotes, footer is a pain in the tail to use because they want the same thing in every page unless you really, really work super hard.
Well,
right?
you make a new section, and then each section can have different headers and footers.
Right, but it's still a pain to do.
Yeah.
So I've noticed out of WordPerfect, there's a thing called Advanced. I got like an Advanced 7.2 or something like that. It goes down to the bottom of the page, and then I can put my text. Real simple.
Right.
But Advanced is not a Word command.
No, it isn't. And
it follows the WordPerfect command. It does it, but if I try to do a new page,
right,
I can't enter that command.
One thing that you can do is create that thing. Now, most of the pages are the same, and the labels at the bottom are different, right?
No, I got like a page of addresses of friends, a page of dancers, a page of work things. You know, this all doctors. You know, just.
Right. The old-fashioned way to do it is just hit return until you get to the end of the page.
And then do it by hand.
But then if something changes above, you have to delete some of those returns.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm apparently not visualizing this quite correctly, and I apologize.
Well, I think there's an advanced command that goes to a specific line.
Right.
And in WordPerfect. But there is not. Is there something like that you've ever heard of?
No. Once you reach the bottom of a page, as Steve said, you have to do carriage returns to get somewhere else.
Okay.
You could put them in the footer, but you're right. It'll try to duplicate that on every single page.
But you can continuously change the footer for each page.
Yeah, but you're saying that's a pain because now you got to start a new section, and it's a 5-6-step process.
Shift-Enter starts a new section.
Yeah.
And then you have a new header and footer for that section.
Yeah, I mean, I found I can copy. If I turn Field View on, I can copy it to another page, this little advanced command. I was trying to figure out how to enter one somehow in a new document.
Yeah, I honestly do not know. But, again, we'll look into that. The advanced command from WordPerfect.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Sorry.
Thank you.
All right. We've been asked to repeat the address for Enright PC before the end of the show.
It's 70 Empire Boulevard, 1.5 mile up from Dan's Craft.
And the phone number?
442-4843. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
And Mac Ave?
Is 7716 Victor Menden Road, Route 251, just off of 96, just past Eastview Mall.
And I live at home with my family, and I'll be hanged if I'll give you that information. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who, again, has dedicated his time and his talent to...
And congratulations to Chris. He got all the podcasts up and running. We figured out what was wrong with the feed code. So we're pretty well caught up with all the old shows.
Pretty well. And Jessica Sawyer, who did a phenomenal job today. Thank you, Jessica. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbite.